Hello and welcome to Gilead. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Soren Hotchair, and I'm the Communications and Admin Haas here. This past Sunday, July 23rd, Reverend Rebecca Anderson preached her last sermon before leaving for sabbatical. She'll be back in November, but don't worry, Reverend Vince is coming back. Our series in July has been about beef, stories of conflict. What happens when you can't turn the other cheek? Listen now.
Here's the thing, I had followed all the rules, including the ones that drove me to tears when restaurants and patios were full but the lakefront was closed. I didn't sneak down to Montrose Harbor, even though I deeply believe that the guideline was wrong-headed and ridiculous and a sign that capitalism really is in charge. We worked so hard to keep the wheels on this church, to make community when none seemed possible, to make Zoom church and sidewalk communion 6 feet away from each other and Advent wreaths made out of beer. When we made music, we sang with the doors open in the middle of the winter and Owen wore a hat and Adam wore fingerless gloves. We gave up so much and worked so hard, just like we were supposed to. We made Drive-In Christmas happen together with stories and singing and scripture that y'all recorded at home, and we carpooled with windows open and masks on to a parking lot that's not in any of our neighborhoods to watch it together, and then we scattered back into the night, and that was December 20th, so on Christmas Eve, I was free, and I took a walk down here to pick up some books in my office because it's not like I had anything else to do. And I was wearing jeans and boots and a chunky sweater and a vest, and I was walking to an empty church on Christmas Eve, and I passed a place up the street where the lights were on. Poinsettias at every window, red bunting over every door, congregants dressed in slim sheath dresses, red and wearing high heels, black velvet, and congregants in suits and carrying presents and the lights blazing, and it looked the way trumpets sound. And even then, even though I could hardly believe it, and even though I was sad, I didn't judge. I was terribly surprised, but I didn't judge. Because that's the other thing. I followed all the rules, and I didn't judge people who didn't. And I don't think it's because I'm noble or good. It was more like, yeah, I've heard of this country before. And also, yeah, I mean, people don't believe science. And most of all, yeah, I mean, people are idiots. So hear me when I say it was not a moral victory of mine. It's because I already had a pretty low opinion of, like, Gen Pop. That and the fact that it's just not what I did with my energy. What I did with my energy was different than some of my friends, probably some of you here did, people who would go out for a walk and come back with a tally of how many unmasked folks they saw. That's just not what I did. Instead, for one thing, I cried a lot. When I swung wide to cross paths on a sidewalk with somebody, I cried. Or when I saw that one guy with his toddler on a balance bike in a parking lot, I cried. Or when I saw a couple outside my window so obviously wanting to kiss but not doing it, I cried. Or when I read the news, I cried. Or listened to the news, I cried. Or saw pictures in the news, I cried. I was probably dehydrated, so I didn't have a lot left over. Again, the point is it wasn't a moral victory. It's just my personality. And the point is, I followed the rules, all the rules, and I didn't judge other people, except for the baseline thing of thinking they're idiots. But I didn't judge anybody in a new way. And I also took all the permissions that came our way. So when in April 2021, the CDC said that vaccinated people could go outside without masks, I atypically was an early adopter. That afternoon, I was meeting my best friend Kelly for a walk, and I didn't even take a mask. Within half a block of my house, I texted her, "So you don't fall over in a dead faint, I'm not wearing a mask," I said. "I'm getting a lot of stink eye out here." "Perfect," she texted back, "same." I kept walking north, knowing that she was headed toward me on Glenwood, a one-way street that became like a pedestrian thoroughfare at the height of the pandemic. And after we met up, but didn't hug, because I'm a rule follower, it wasn't allowed, we turned to walk together, and that's when it happened. Y'all know the whole, like, eye for an eye thing is a limitation on violence, yeah? Like, I feel like it gets talked about a lot now. We don't really need to rehash it in this company. But just briefly, so we're all on the same page, you find this teaching in the book of Exodus and in the much older Code of Hammurabi from the same part of the world. Exodus is sort of like a remix of the code, putting stricter limits on the punishments that are available for all kinds of things. The point is to, like, put a cap on retribution, to outlaw for God's people escalation. You can only take an eye for an eye, only a tooth for a tooth. Anything up to and including that, you're within your rights. That's the new rule as of like 500, 600 BCE. And then Jesus comes along and preaches on a mount or maybe a plain, and he offers a further remix in the same direction. You've heard it said that there should be a limit to your violence, but I say to you, don't use violence at all. Don't resist an evildoer. Instead, if anybody strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. Easy. I'm a pacifist, and that's not a moral victory either. It's something that rarely comes up and is almost never tested. So far in my life, it has been extremely easy for me to avoid killing anybody or even taking part in military service. It's been easy for me to take a stance against the death penalty, against wars and ongoing occupations that our country, my country, takes part in. But there are at least two ways, two big ways, to get Jesus wrong on this whole turn the other cheek rule. One, of course, is to think it means we're supposed to submit to evil and abuse and oppression. Or maybe worse, to think it means someone else is supposed to submit to evil and abuse and oppression. That's one big way that for today, I'm just going to say we can all agree is wrong. The other big way is to think that this turn the other cheek thing doesn't apply to me. Because it's a metaphor. Or because it's in the same section where Jesus tells us to be perfect like God is perfect. And that means I'm just supposed to feel bad about how I'll never be decent, never mind perfect, and all that feeling bad will turn me to God's grace. Or this doesn't apply to me because I'm already a pacifist by nature and my life circumstance. Or it doesn't apply to me because I've been called to this just war that I'm a part of. Or because it's about big organized movements of nonviolence, not these little day-to-day interactions. One preacher I read this week said correctly that Jesus was preaching to people with Roman soldiers breathing down their necks, life and death circumstances. Jesus was not talking about getting too many emails from your irritating coworkers. And I'm not talking about you as Mary or Soren. I'm talking about me. But one of the ways to get it wrong is to think that it doesn't apply to me in these little day-to-day interactions, like on Glenwood, two-thirds of the way through the big part of the pandemic. So we were walking south without any masks. And coming our way was an older white guy wearing like a light windbreaker. He had a short dog with him, and I couldn't see much of his face between the brim of his hat and his mask. As we crossed paths, he muttered something to the effect that we ought to be wearing masks. And my go-to response to road rage these days, whether it's like pedestrian or vehicular, is to be kind of condescending in a schoolmarmy way. So what I said to him, sort of take one, was, "We're good, sir." To which he responded by calling us idiots. And abruptly, I had had fucking enough. So I responded by telling him to fuck off with, I believe, like the full extension finger, you know what I mean? Like not the cute one, but all the way. To which he responded by, like something, something, who can keep it straight? To which I responded to with my next level go-to men-only edition, which is, I'm definitely out here looking for a man to tell me what the fuck to do, which I know is too long to yell at anyone, especially if you're like on a bike. I have yelled it from a bike, but it is extremely satisfying to hit that fuck so hard, the clacking around my mouth righteously, to which he responded, when will this end, by asking where we got our information, to which I responded to my eternal shame, however truthful it was, I get my information from Dr. Fauci and the CDC. I would say like maybe a dozen of my neighbors were in earshot of this when it happened. And in case it's not obvious, my primary shame was the nerd alert energy I served with Dr. Fauci and the CDC. And like not my bad behavior. until my brother said later that week, "You know that guy's going to turn up at one of your churches now." Whenever pacifism comes up, or actually any of the rest of this passage, people start throwing around hypotheticals. Here's the whole passage. "Don't resist an evildoer, but if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and don't refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you." There are 100 deep-cut, historical, critical reads on each one of those, and I'm very much tempted to get into it. But for now, let's just stick with the hypotheticals. What are we supposed to submit to evil and abuse and oppression? Understandable, especially since some Christians have said so, and especially to marginalized people. What, am I just supposed to give away everything I have? What if someone can't go another mile? If I gave to every person on the street who asked, if I loaned my shit to anybody who asked, what would I do when I need it? What if? And I agree, I don't give to everyone who asks. I've never run into the coat and cloak thing, but I probably wouldn't do that either. And by the grace of God, I have not been exposed to or the victim of physical violence in my life. And if you have, I am so fucking sorry. This may not be for you, this next part. But it is for me. The rubber meets the road for me for now in little day-to-day interactions, which are not hypothetical. And if I can't follow Jesus, the way of Jesus on Glenwood, listen, I had my reasons. Everyone does. The people Jesus was preaching to, they were in life and death circumstances, just like some of us. The mile that they were not hypothetically forced to go was short-term military conscription. Some asshole transplant soldier grabbing them out of a crowd and saying, "You carry this." They, like some of us, lived in a system where the justice system was fucked, where someone impoverished could be sued for the nothing they have. They were enslaved, they were occupied, they were gender minorities, they were children, they were impoverished. They had their reasons, and to them, as to us, the world says, you have two choices, fight back or fucking take it. And Jesus says, those, beloved, are not your only options. You do not have to cooperate with systems of abuse and humiliation, and usury, and injustice, and violence. You don't have to let your oppressor dictate the terms of your resistance. You do get to resist. In fact, it's what I recommend to you, he said to them, and says to us, there is a third way, and it is to actively engage and oppose all of that without taking up the methodology of your opponent. Because he was a revolutionary, organizing along new radical lines extending from those who'd come before him. Organizing not around violence, not around a limit to violence, not around just violence, not around satisfying retorts that do nothing but feel good in my mouth, not passivity, not submission, not shame, but active non-cooperation in the whole paradigm that says those are your choices, the whole paradigm that says if you can't take it or give it back, you're nothing. It's easy for me to point to the places where I failed to be as kind as I wish I'd been, that guy on Glenwood. I mean, for one thing, it's a thing I don't do that much, by the grace of God. It's harder for me to confess the places where I didn't do the hard, bracing, engaging thing that Jesus commends to us. The whole thing built on the fact that each and every person, the oppressed, the kept down, the middle school euphonium player, the masked, the judgmental, the Tennessee church planter, the judgmental, the easy pacifist, the principled soldier, each and every one, a person, a neighbor. Built not on me letting go of my personhood or demanding that you do. It's so much harder. All the work, all the exhaustion, all the rule following, all the rule breaking, it's all supposed to point us toward love. I want to be a part of a community that asks that hard shit of me, and you do it. Beloved, I'm looking forward to leaving, and I'm looking forward to coming back and engaging on the terms that God sets.